This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, you commie homo-loving sons of a guns, as Sean Penn said yesterday.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, he said that on the Oscars. This is Jack Valinsky.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And so tonight, do you know who Assist Hers is?
Well, I do, but do our listeners?
Well, that's right. Who are they?
They are a nonprofit lesbian organization that does good work in our community.
Okay. And they also have an in-home health care support system. And to benefit that effort, there's going to be the fourth annual softball tournament to benefit Assist Hers. And that's going to be coming up at some point this spring. You know, it's time to get out the equipment.
Because the equipment, the balls and the bats.
Mm-hmm. It's time to play.
Play ball, yeah.
So that's what we're going to be talking about, shortly, I guess, sort of at the start of the program. And then, of course, we have news wrap from This Way Out. And the rest of, you know, the kind of stuff that This Way Out does.
Right, including audio file this month that JD contributes to. And in the second hour, we have the first of a two-month special, the things I heard on cassette. Back in the early days when a lot of the queer music was being produced, it was distributed via cassette.
What is a cassette?
What is a cassette?
What is that? No, I'm just kidding. I remember cassette, but it's been a long time.
Barely. Well, originally the cassette was made just for, like, dictation purposes.
Right. That was a long time ago.
Yes, and then they tried to make it better fidelity.
I would say your gray hairs are showing, but...
I had Michael Jackson Thriller on cassette, and I wore that thing out. Man, I played it till it disintegrated.
It wasn't there anymore.
Ran out, yeah.
Well, and we used to play a lot of music on this show on cassette, or actually on Waldenstein,
true.
The show before here.
Long time ago.
Because that was the only way we could get it back then. Because it was cheaper to produce than when vinyl was. And I'm sure JD's going to talk about that. But first, though, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Oscars last night. Boy, it was gay, wasn't
it? It's the gayest day of the year.
No, the Tonys is the gayest.
Well, but last night kind of had a little Tony-esque feel to it.
Yes, because the host that was there last night is probably just as well known for being on stage.
He did a good job last night, I thought, both hosting and getting out there and singing and then dancing.
Well, he's capable of doing that. We weren't really sure who was going to win the Oscars, but the best screenplay was done by Dustin Lance Black, who wrote Milk. He gave a wonderful speech, including thanking the people that were still around from the Harvey Milk day, Cronenberg and Cleve Jones.
Cleve Jones, yeah.
And I heard a great interview on Fresh Air, I think it was, with him. And I didn't realize how young he was.
He is very young.
He spent a lot of time writing that screenplay to get it as you know, close as possible. And actually, there was an article in today's Chronicle, which I saw, you know, asking who saw Harvey Milk outside the GLBT community.
Well, hopefully, this will give some recognition and some spotlight and visibility to the film. I mean, I was surprised that Sean Penn won. I was secretly hoping that he
would. Yes.
But I was glad to see that because he did a knockout job.
Mickey Rourke was the one that was supposedly favored. A lot of people were guessing that he would win that because it was sort of a comeback for his performance. But Sean Penn did fabulously as Harvey Milk. And when you actually compare the two pictures and
it's amazing.
The speeches that were given that we have, it was absolutely amazing. And the set design on that movie really sort of brought it back to the time period.
Absolutely. So if you're out there and you have not seen Milk, this is your wake-up call. Go see it. It's
still playing at Landmark River Oaks.
Yes.
I don't know if it's playing anywhere else, but certainly you can check it out. It will be on DVD probably within the next couple of months.
I'm going to buy that for sure.
Or rent it or buy it or whatever. It's really, really worth seeing. And if you're all interested in politics, that it's also a good thing to see.
I think the interesting thing is kind of the younger generation that went out and saw it and kind of understood the history and kind of how we got to this point and what we went through as a community.
And Sean Penn, when he got up there and accepted the award, that's what he said. He says, "You commie homo loving sons of a guns," when he was addressing the audience and a lot of the voters who were in the audience. He did also acknowledge.
He was shaking when he was doing his acceptance speech with his little list. He was kind of, you could tell he was very nervous and knew it was a big moment.
So it was fun. I didn't see it all. I saw most of it, and the song and dance routines.
The best part is Beyonce coming out in her red sparkly dress. I'm like, oh, this is great.
She is good, isn't she?
I love her.
Native of Houston, as they usually say when she's introduced. Well, why don't we play a little bit of music right now, and we will be up hopefully with our guest talking about the Sisters and the softball tournament that's coming up.
About the way he walks in a room makes me weak in my knees. Something about the way he smiles at me and my heart skips a beat. Something about the way he holds my hand and everything gets hazy. There's just something about the way he looks at me. Something I can feel but I just can't see. And what it all comes down to is the guy just drives me crazy. He just drives me crazy. Out of my mind like a jukebox in July. He's got me walking on air and I swear there's a fair chance that I could fly. He just drives me crazy. And I got a feeling we're dealing with love. Take it slow. He drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know? Touch that moves me so much I just tremble inside. Something about the way he greets me sweetly with arms open wide. Something about the way he calls my name and I wilt like a daisy. There's just something about the way he looked last night. Something in the way that he held me tight. And what it all comes down to is the guy just drives me crazy. He just drives me crazy. Out of my mind like a jukebox in July. He's got me walking on air and I swear there's a fair chance that I could fly. He just drives me crazy. I got a feeling we're dealing with love. Take it slow. He drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know? I can't sleep at night. He consumes my dreams. I got no appetite. Something inside me screams. He just drives me crazy. Out of my mind like a jukebox in July. He's got me walking on air and I swear there's a fair chance that I can fly. He just drives me crazy. And I got a feeling we're dealing with love. Take it slow. He drives me crazy. And I wonder, does he know? He just
Brian, has that ever happened to you? He drives you crazy?
He does all the time, and then I say, that's okay, because I love him, and I keep on going.
Okay. That was Rendell Walker, He Drives Me Crazy, from 2008. And so we're going to go ahead and go to This Way Out.
This Way Out.
Yeah, because we're waiting on our guests to arrive to
our
talk
lesbian
about volleyball.
Replace, huh?
So we're actually going to swap positions there, and
we're going to do a do-si-do two-step.
Something like that.
Okay.
And I'm going to drag this over here, and I'm going to punch this button. This is Queer Voices.
I needed to understand, why does my creator give me all these feelings, and at the same time, me being a dedicated Muslim, I'm going to go to hell. So there was a pressing need personally to study Islam and to find out the answers for myself. Down near you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Burundi's Senate rejects an anti-sex law, a gay South African imam's scholarship charms his critics, and an acoustic couple, a sultry genre bender, and an independent soloist in the audiophile. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 21st, 2009. The Senate of the Central African nation of Burundi has overwhelmingly defeated a move to make homosexuality a criminal offense. The lower house approved the measure in November, generating sharp criticism from several international human rights groups and the UN Program on HIV/AIDS. The Senate deleted the criminalization of homosexuality and major reforms of the country's legal system. The new legislation maintains a ban on the death penalty and protects women and children from all forms of violence, especially sexual violence. Burundi was racked by civil war from 1993 until elections in 2005 restored an ostensibly democratic political system. Several grandstanding politicians and religious leaders have blamed homosexuality for many of the country's ills. Michelle Sidibe, the executive director of the joint UN program on HIV/AIDS, praised the Senate for not criminalizing homosexuality, noting that it would have driven gay men further underground in an already disapproving society, making them even harder to reach with HIV/AIDS education and treatment programs. The penal code reforms now return to the lower house for final approval.
A three-day forum in Hong Kong this week addressed the soaring rate of HIV/AIDS among gay and bisexual men in Asia. It ended with delegates calling for countries in the region that outlaw homosexual acts to decriminalize them. Organizers issued a statement saying that highly prohibitive legal frameworks against homosexuality are fueling an AIDS epidemic in Asia among men who have sex with men, which by some estimates number up to 10 million. Forum participants said the alarming spike in HIV infections is being driven by younger people who aren't practicing safe sex and by a lack of awareness among one of the disease's most vulnerable groups, gay and bisexual men, in countries that continue to stigmatize them. Edmund Settle from the United Nations Development Program noted that a number of Asian countries are former British colonies that have maintained a Victorian-era law against so-called crimes against nature. India's High Court is currently considering an effort to overturn such a law. Chinese activist Zhen Li praised his government for decriminalizing homosexuality in 2001 and told a post-forum news conference that as long as these laws are in effect, it will push people into dark places.
Meanwhile, gays and lesbians came into the light on Valentine's Day on the streets of Beijing in a rare display of public outreach. According to a report by the Reuters news agency, about 30 people gathered on a street in the Chinese capital near Tiananmen Square to stage mock wedding photo sessions and pass out roses, along with pink-colored handouts urging support for marriage equality. The activists drew smiles and an occasional scowl from passersby. Organizers said similar events took place in three other cities. One Beijing participant, who used the name Dana, told Reuters that, "Through today's event, I want to tell everyone that there are a lot of us around them. They just can't see us, and that we are the same as everyone else." While there are fledgling gay night spots in Beijing and Shanghai, homosexuality remains a subject that's rarely addressed publicly in China.
Elsewhere, Bolivia's new constitution, approved by 61% of voters last month, bans discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. It came into force on February 7th. New York-based Latino activist Andre Duque told gay journalist Rex Wagner that an article titled Fundamental Rights and Guarantees reads, "The state prohibits and punishes all forms of discrimination founded on the basis of sex, skin color, gender, age, sexual orientation and gender identity, origin, culture, nationality, citizenship, language, religious beliefs, ideology, political or philosophical affiliation." But Duque said the new constitution also defines marriage as exclusively between a man and a woman, and it was unclear if the LGBT anti-bias protections apply within a parallel tribal justice system that was also established by the new constitution. Some 60% of Bolivians may fall under that jurisdiction.
Hungary's government has offered a new registered partnership bill to replace one that was struck down as unconstitutional just before it was to take effect on January 1st. The Constitutional Court overturned the previous partnership measure because it would have also given those marriage-like rights to unmarried heterosexual couples, violating the special protection granted to marriage by the Constitution. The new bill proposes registered partnerships only for same-gender couples and would grant them all the rights of marriage except adoption and the joint use of one spouse's last name. It's unclear if Parliament will pass the new bill. Hungary has had a minority government since the now opposition liberals left the governing coalition early last year. Activist Tomás Dombos believes that the bill has a high chance of being passed, saying that governing parties hardly ever vote against proposals by their own government, and the liberals fully support the new bill. It is, however, very hard to predict how delicate negotiations involved in running a minority government will affect voting on the bill.
In a rare bit of lesbi-gay positive news from a GOP-controlled U.S. state legislature, Indiana Senate Republican caucus voted this week not to consider a proposal that would have constitutionally defined marriage as exclusively heterosexual. The resolution required approval by the Senate and House in two consecutive legislative sessions and, if approved, would then have gone before the voters. House Speaker B. Patrick Bowers said a similar measure introduced there will also not be considered. Indiana already has a so-called defense of marriage law that bans same-gender marriage and civil unions, but supporters of a constitutional amendment worry that it could be overturned by the courts. Two previous attempts to advance a heterosexual-only marriage amendment in the Indiana legislature died. On both occasions, it had passed the Senate only to fail in the House.
But five pieces of legislation to advance lesbi-gay civil rights in the state of Utah have failed. The group of bills under the umbrella title of the Common Ground Initiative would have repealed a section of the state's constitutional ban on same-gender marriage, granted limited marriage-like rights to same-gender couples in areas such as medical decision-making and inheritance, and provided employment and housing anti-bias protections. The measures had the support of Republican Governor John Huntsman, but were apparently derailed, at least in part, because of full-page ads in the state's major newspapers by a conservative group called America Forever that compared lesbians and gay men to druggies and hookers, condemned public displays of homosexuality, and called it anti-species behavior.
And finally, two gay-related sexual harassment lawsuits, thousands of miles apart, had decidedly different outcomes this week. A British labor tribunal awarded £62,500, about $90,000, to a gay man who was ridiculed for 2 years by a female coworker. She repeatedly made sexual advances and jiggled her breasts at him. Alwyn Rondeau, a 46-year-old security guard at London's Heathrow Airport, told the tribunal that the harassment didn't stop after 42-year-old coworker Lucy Tilton was told that he is gay. He said on one occasion she put his hand on her breast and said, "You wouldn't know what to do with a woman anyway." After several spurned advances, Chilton then accused Rondeau of an inappropriate sexual behavior, which led to his suspension. Even after her claims were determined to be false, no action was taken against Chilton. Rondeau said that she was, in fact, eventually promoted. Dr. Neil Brenner, a consultant psychiatrist at North London's Priory Hospital, testified that Rondeau clearly has been through a very traumatic experience. He feels he has been treated like a criminal, even though he has been exonerated. Rondeau, who's taking medication for severe depression and had to move, told reporters that he was pleased with the outcome, but that it wasn't the money that was important. It was justice that I wanted, against her and management, for what I have been through every day for the past 2 years.
But a San Diego, California jury decided that 4 firefighters were sexually harassed because they were ordered to participate in the local LGBT pride parade and ordered the city to pay them a combined total of $34,300. The plaintiffs had originally each sought $1 million in damages. They claimed that they were the victims of vulgar sexual gestures and lewd comments and forced to watch what their attorney called barely clothed men and women simulate sex acts and touch themselves and one another while riding in a fire engine at the July 2007 parade, which drew about 150,000 spectators. A crew that had volunteered to ride in the parade pulled out after the captain's mother died. The fire department then ordered the crew in the city's Hillcrest area, home to the large LGBT population where the parade is held, to fill in. Days later, Fire Rescue Chief Tracy Jarman apologized to the firefighters, and the department changed its policy to make participation in future parades strictly voluntary. San Diego Pride Parade organizers issued a statement saying that the mini-sized payout the jury awarded for emotional distress to the firefighters speaks volumes about the so-called notion that they endured severe or pervasive trauma while wearing earphones, sitting 6 feet off the ground inside a fire truck with the windows rolled up and a roaring diesel engine powering them along a one-mile parade route. This is the same parade route followed by hundreds of public safety and law enforcement officers annually who are unconditionally welcomed with applause by cheering crowds. The city of San Diego is considering an appeal of the verdict.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 21st, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Openly gay writer Dustin Lance Black won the Best Original Screenplay Oscar this week for dramatizing the last years in the life of Harvey Milk. Hear Dustin's heartfelt acceptance speech for the first time or again, comments by Best Actor winner Sean Penn, and more next time on This Way Out. And later in this program, a dynamic duo, a multi-genre performer, and a grassroots soloist serenade the audiophile. But first... Just like the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament, the Holy Quran contains verses that lead traditional clerics to condemn homosexuality outright. But there are those rare Islamic spiritual leaders, or imams, who are gay. One of the first to come out publicly was Imam Mohsin Hendricks in South Africa. This Way Out correspondent and Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Eric Boschemann asked him how he manages to resolve the apparent contradictions.
That's one of the reasons why I went to study, because I wanted to clear up the contradiction. I grew up in a very staunch Muslim home, so it was preached that homosexuality is completely wrong and you're going to go to hell for that. So I needed to understand, why does my Creator give me all these feelings and at the same time, me being a dedicated Muslim, I'm going to go to hell. So there was a pressing need personally to study Islam and to find out the answers for myself. Only at the age of 29, when I came out, did I really put all that information together and said to myself, look, this is what I understand from it and this is what I'm going to be following.
What did you understand?
I understood that the whole story of Sodom and Gomorrah, as it is related in the Quran,
has nothing to do with sexual orientation. Homosexuality and sodomy, they are two distinct things. Sodomy, according to the Quran, in the last example that God puts of the angels that came down as handsome, disguised as handsome young men, the test around that, how the men of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah came rushing towards them, it was nothing to do with consensual sex. They were out to molest these men. So it's got no relation to sexual orientation. And this was my conclusion.
So basically, are you saying that Muslim scholars have misinterpreted or are misinterpreting the Quran?
I wouldn't say they have misinterpreted. I think they have interpreted it with the information that they had at that time. Unfortunately, there hasn't been research done after the 9th century.
Let's come back to you. You said that you came out when you were 29 years old, but before then you actually got married, didn't you?
Yes, I got married when I was 23, and I was married for 6 years. I've got 3 kids out of the marriage as well. But the reason why I got married was because my society says that every person that studies Islam to become an imam, he should be getting married. And if I did not go that way, I would always worried and thought maybe if I did get married, then I would have been straight by now. I went through that, and 7 days before the wedding, I actually called my wife one side and I said to her, look, I have to tell you something because I can't go into a relationship with you like this, a commitment like this, without you knowing who I really am. And so I told her, and she was quite furious. And I said to her, look, you don't have to respond right now. Go home and think about it. But the night she called me and she said, look, I'm in love with you. I want to, you know, help you to solve this problem. And I was like, okay, let's do this together. But it wasn't long down the line, about a year in the marriage, that I realized that I just cannot connect with a woman. Unfortunately, by that time, she already was pregnant with the one child. And then when the child came, I felt that maybe it's necessary to stay in the marriage for the sake of the child. And then the other two, I don't know how they happened, but they happened. After 6 years, we both just felt that we were not serving each other in the relationship. And so we broke it up.
And is it at that moment that you actually came out to other people?
Yes, because of a culmination of a lot of pressures, social pressures, personal, religious. It was just too overwhelming for me to live this double life. Well, the first person I needed to come out to was my mother. And if she was okay with it, I didn't really care about what other people think. And a month after I got divorced, my mother came to find out that I was divorced, and she asked me, I hear that the reason why you divorce is because you... And she couldn't say the word gay. And I finished the sentence for her, and she fainted. But the next day when she came into my room and we discussed it, and she says, look, I cannot accept this. We'll have to find ways of how to make you change this. And I said, Mother, I've been struggling with this for more than 20 years. I think I need to help you to find ways to accept it. She said, but I cannot accept it. My religion doesn't allow me to accept it. And I cannot accept personally what you're trying to do. You want to change me. And she could see at that time that I was very serious about it, and I was prepared to cut the relationship with my mother. And then she sat up and then she said, okay, well, show me what do you understand about it. And I took the opportunity ever since to bring my friends to my mother, my gay friends. Every time when there's something on TV about homosexuality, I would force her to watch it. I would bring articles for her to watch it. And when I got into my first relationship, I moved to another city, Johannesburg. And my mother came to visit us and she spent 10 days with us. And when she left after the 10 days, she said, I don't see any difference between your relationship and a straight relationship because you both fight like husband and wife. So that for me was a confirmation that she's come to accept it.
Do you notice that attitudes are changing in the Muslim community in South Africa?
I think in the last 5 years, there has been more discussions and debates around homosexuality in our community than ever before. Just the mere fact that there has been no strong opposition towards these debates, I think for me it's an indication of some sort of acceptance. It just can't happen publicly right now. We recently also had a Muslim culture seminar at the Wits University where a couple of academics, Muslim academics, delivered their speeches, and I also delivered mine, and it was very well accepted amongst them. But some of them commented and said, look, we support your work, we just can't say it publicly because of our affiliation to other organizations in the community.
Do you think that you can talk about this subject in the Muslim community because this is South Africa? It's not one of the more conservative countries like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I think the Muslim community understands that if they do
oppose homosexuality publicly that they could get in trouble. So I guess we're kind of blessed in South Africa to be able to do this work.
How do people treat you in general when they know that you're gay and you're Muslim?
I don't know if it's my charm, but I do get lots of respect.
That was Muslim Imam Mohsin Hendricks of South Africa in conversation with Radio Netherlands reporter Eric Boschemann.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
A married musical match looks for its live sound, a sultry Texas genre bender tries something soulful, an independent kind of guy goes out on his own, and they all wind up in this edition of The Audiophile.
2008 was a good year for the duo Jason and DeMarco. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. They not only released a new CD called Safe, but also got married.
All I long for is someone to love, who understands me, who sees me as I am.
Also in 2008, a documentary was released about them called We're All Angels. But of course, the music is the message.
For years, our fans have been telling us how much they love our music and how much they love our album, but they've also said that there's something about a live show where the energy's through the roof.
And on our new album, we decided that we were going to bring the band into the studio with us so we could capture this live acoustic sound on our new album, Safe.
Find out more about the album Safe at www.jasonanddemarco.com.
Ginger Lee comes from a long line of Texas artists, and adding to that history is her seventh album called Don't Be Shy.
Take my breathing, take my beating, take the belly onto my dress. Take my bleeding, take my babies, take the brain inside my head. Leave me with nothing but my pride. Honor me a thousand times more than your brother, more than your mother, more than your lover you married last night.
The music of Ginger Lee crosses many genres and is a bit hard to quantify, as she quickly tells us.
My new album, Don't Be Shy, is much jazzier than my older records, but it still contains various genres. Like I've always done, I'm sort of known for various genres. The theme across the album is that it's very sexy and sultry and a little bit more urban, and really tapped into the part of my voice that's a little more soulful and, like I said already, jazzy.
You know, sky-rise condos are coming up on every corner like weeds, and this city is growing like the love between you and me.
Thank you.
You can get more information about Ginger Lee and her album, Don't Be Shy, at www.glee.com. That's the letter G, LEIGH.com.
The movie Short Bus may have blasted Jay Brannon into the spotlight, but we much admire his new album.
In the microwave window, for the 10th time he should have called me an hour ago. Would he be here with flowers if I lived in Arizona? They say there's no love left in the big cities. It's kind of true. I guess you'll find me coming soon to a small town near you. I'll sell my guitar so I can buy myself a tractor.
Jay is an independent artist doing his own thing, even, as he told his fans in a YouTube video, down to self-financing this album.
I've gotten a lot of emails saying congratulations on the record deal, and I'm glad the executives have finally come to their senses, etc. And I just wanted to clear something up, actually. I paid for this record myself, using the money that you guys have given me through buying songs on iTunes and through CD Baby and Napster. I've saved all that money, and I just put it into this album. There's really no label here. There's no executives. I am the record label, Jay Brannon.
He said I could spend the night. I said thanks, but that's all right. You can paint your number on my face, but I'm not into sleeping at someone else's place. I'm bow-legged and starving, but when I felt freedom ring, I've got my laptop for pleasure and my guitar for pain. Love's a buried treasure, but I don't need love to feel this way.
.jbrannon.com. And Brannon is spelled B-R-A-N-N-A-N.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at 594 Sawdust Road, number 273, Spring, Texas, 77380, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
I'm bow-legged and starving, but walking home happy. Let this mark the moment when I felt freedom ring. I've got my laptop for pleasure and my guitar for pain. Love's a buried treasure, but I don't need love to feel this way. Yay, yay, yay.
And just a note, the CD, the title of the CD that they were talking about is actually a common obscenity, so I kind of had to blank that out rather than let it go over the air. But anyway, you can find out more about that on JD's website, as he noted. Now, since our guest didn't show up this evening, we're going to go back into the archives and grab some more from This Way Out.
Homosexuality is not specifically prohibited in Egypt. Still, gay men are regularly arrested on charges of debauchery or offenses against public morality in the predominantly Muslim country. In 2001, 52 men were rounded up in an infamous police raid on a floating nightclub. The Queen Boat was a well-known gathering place for gays in Cairo, the Egyptian capital. 23 of the men were convicted and sentenced to between 1 and 5 years hard labor. One of them was 28-year-old Mazen. He spoke with Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Jonathan Gruber.
I've been arrested outside of this discotheque, and I have spent 20 years in jail because of my homosexuality. I have been judged by the name of Islam, and this was the problem, because they didn't judge me only as a homosexual, but as a heathen, like someone he don't believe in any God, someone he don't believe in anything. So this was the first thing that I have been judged for. We have been tried twice. The first one, it was in 2001, and the second one, it was in 2003, because after 1 year, spending 1 year in prison, we went out under the pressure of the United States and the European Union. They made another judgment, and the second one, it was very clear. They said, we judge these people because they are homosexual.
During his year in prison, Mazen was raped by the guards. After his release, he knew that he had to keep quiet about his ordeal.
Nobody knows that I've been in jail except my family. It wasn't all my family as well, it was only my mother, which was supporting me, because she believed in me, she believed that I'm a good guy. And she believed, even I'm someone who believes in God, I was a very, very good Muslim, and I'm still. But I was practicing that more than right now. She knew that I'm not doing this thing because, as I told you, the first crime, it was like, we don't believe in God, we don't believe in Quran, and we are not Muslim. She believed that I'm not that guy who do this stuff. She told to me, I know that you are not what they said, but are you homosexual? Because they make a relation between the homosexuality and all these things. And my answer was no, of course, because I'm not saying to my mother, even if she know, but we never talk about that.
When the Egyptian authorities tried to try him a second time, Mazen fled the country. He applied for asylum in France, and he's been living there ever since. Despite everything he's been through, Mazen has not rejected Islam and reconciles his homosexuality and his belief this way.
As a Muslim, as a gay Muslim, I cannot say more than this. I'm a gay and I'm a Muslim. I'm accepting my homosexuality as I'm living my Islam. It's not allowing it, but for me, I believe in God, and I believe that in something, God made me like this, and I'm a creation of God. He chose to make me homo. It's something we're born with. Or you're born homo, or you're not born homosexual. So for me, it's something like this. This is what I believe. Being homosexual, it's not a crime. As soon as you don't hurt anybody, as soon as you don't kill anybody, as soon as you don't lie, as soon as you don't do crimes, so you are a good guy. And you do what you believe in. And I still believe in God. I'm still doing what God asked me to do. And I'm still living my homosexuality. I completely agree with that. If I'm trying to do something right now, it's like to stop arresting people, stop making from the homosexuality a crime. This is a struggle, and that's what I'm going to try to do. And that's what I will do for, I think, for the rest of my life. I don't know how to tell you, but it's a very difficult fight. Very difficult. But I have accepted, so no choice right now. I can go back.
That was Mazen, an Egyptian Muslim who had to flee his country because of his homosexuality. He spoke with Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Jonathan Gruber.
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, an informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Where did Augustine Burroughs get his vengeful wit? The author of Running with Scissors blunts his well-known sharp-edged humor in his new memoir, A Wolf at the Table, as he dissects a horrifyingly disturbing relationship with his father. This Way Out queer lit commentator Janet Mason called it clever, contained, and courageous. Now we hear from the openly gay writer himself during his Australian book tour as he chats with our Brisbane correspondent, John Frame.
Augustine Burroughs, welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Welcome to Brisbane.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It really is.
In Wolf at the Table, you're talking specifically about your experience as a very young man, virtually from childbirth, and especially regarding your relationship with your parents, mostly your father.
I was never going to write about my father. It was something that I felt was just in my past, much like I felt Running with Scissors, which is my past, and throughout my 20s, I never thought I would write a book about it. And actually, speaking of Running with Scissors, when I did begin writing Running with Scissors, I thought I would include my father in the beginning and start the book earlier chronologically so that people could see and understand that, oh, Running with Scissors was the good part, the happy childhood, that was the dessert. But I could not summarize my father in a chapter or two. It didn't work. It wasn't effective because he could not be summarized. What made that relationship so incredibly terrifying was subtle and needed to be explained. So he died 3 years ago, and instead of feeling that wave of grief, I didn't feel sadness, and I didn't feel longing. I felt free. I felt free for the first time in my life. And now, I had been raised by this absolutely wild psychiatrist who believed you were a free person when you were 13. So I've never gone to school. I've never, gone through step A and B and C so you can land, at D. I have been living on my own since I was 16 and working. And I have been free. And when my father died, I realized, no, I haven't. With that awareness came the knowledge that I immediately had to write this book. And I knew it wasn't going to be a funny book. And that's the thing about A Wolf at the Table. It's really not, it's not a funny book. It's not like my other books. It's a brutal, brutal book. It's very disturbing. And I had a 5 seconds of pause. I mean, I knew I was going to write it. That was never a question. But was I going to publish it? And my only concern was, I don't want to let my readers down, and, I don't want them to, come here expecting yet another funny thing. But, when I thought about it just in another moment, I realized that it seems to me that so many people have come up to me and told me that the favorite part of whatever the book is, it's always often one of the darker or more serious moments. I mean, the material in my book, Dry, which is about alcoholism, and it's a love story, a very sad love story. It's the really, really devastating material about the character George, or Pighead, who dies in that book that affects people. And in Running with Scissors, it's the rape scene. So I thought, maybe people will to accept that from me. But the more important issue was that I can't be the only person with a bad father. And if you go to the bookstore, you would certainly think I am, because all the books about father and son relationships are sports, or their advice from dad to his boy. They're very sentimental books. And they're that's fine. That's fine for a certain segment of the population. But there is a huge number of men, and women too, who did not have the great father, whose father left when when the baby was born, or who drank, or who was extremely violent physically or sexually abusive. I mean, it's an unfortunate list, but it is a long list, and it's common. So when I went out on tour with this, I didn't know what to expect, and what I got were the biggest crowds of my career, absolutely massive numbers of people. And so many of them came up to me and said, me too. I was married to that man. That man was my father. That man was my grand... and it was an amazing thing to see the intensity with which people felt, I think, a sense of camaraderie. I mean, when you read a memoir that perfectly expresses what you have felt but not been able to articulate, or when it describes an experience you've had, and you've never seen it described before, it's profound. It makes you realize that you're not alone in the world, that you have company. I also had, of course, people come up to me, and this was a surprise, and say, I actually had a great dad, but I wanted to give this to him for Father's Day. And I thought that that was, I didn't understand it until I thought a little bit more about it. And why would you want to read this book if you've got a wonderful father? And I think it makes people feel grateful, which was a running with scissors thing. I mean, you know, obviously lots of people who read that had normal, relatively normal, what we call normal lives, or certainly not to the extent of dysfunction that I experienced. But it's great. I love that. I love having people who had a great dad come up to me, and because they often tell their stories. I had a gentleman here in Australia come up to me, an older gentleman, and it brought, the book brought back so many memories for him of just the little things in the book. And he had a great dad, and he started sharing stories of his relationship with his father with me. And while it was as if he was saying, we used to travel to the moon, it was great. You know, it was really great.
Certainly, what I've found from my experience with the book is that you're actually letting us know how you actually progressed to be who you are. It was a coming of real age for you. Because you tell us that it's not just a matter of surviving childhood. You then, as a young adult, had to endure that. You were going through the same situation as your father, having a public image that was one thing, a private life that was really quite messy, but you have actually been able to pull above that. And was that being able to cope, was that when your father died, or were you actually pulling your life together before that happened?
Oh no, I mean I've always been pulled together, and you're right, the book does put, I think, the other books in perspective. I would never actually write a book though that further explained my life. I'm really, in an odd way, I'm not the subject of my books. I mean, I am, but in another way, I'm absolutely not. There's really nothing special or unique about me other than my experiences that I've had, and the fact that I'm able to recall them on the page, so that with full emotion, so that people, I mean, I may not be the best writer in the world. I may not have I don't have a beautiful vocabulary. I mean, I think of like Lionel Shriver, who's a gorgeous writer, and it's not a pretentious vocabulary that she has at all. She just seems to know the right word, and I don't have that. You know, I know six words basically, but I am I'm an expert. I'm like a mechanic. I'm really, really good at bending them to do what they need to do, to say what they need to say, so that they can express the exact and precise emotion of that moment. That's something I can do. It was never my goal to give people another installment of my life, you know, like, it was more to tell the story of, and I happen to be the writer of it, you know, to tell the story of this relationship with this father. And people, I think, when they read these books, I mean, yeah, they definitely read me, and they, you know, they know me, and but I think there's, you know, there's a lot of them in the books as well. The funny thing, when Atlanta, Georgia, you know, if there's one place I can read the crudest and most offensive essay anywhere in the world, it's Atlanta, Georgia, where it's a Republican audience with very high hairsprayed hair, and the men are in suits and have parts, you know, in their hair like in the 70s, and everyone's gorgeously dressed, and yet, I can say anything, because even though the window dressing of my life is perhaps very unfamiliar, very different, very strange, very shocking, the emotion is exactly the same. I mean, that's why the stuff I write about is just really universal. I mean, seeking love from a father, or, you know, wanting to fall in love, or dating all the wrong people. That's what I'm saying. There's really nothing unique or special about me in that sense, other than my ability to recall and to put on the page.
Writer Augustin Burroughs continues his conversation with John Frame about A Wolf at the Table and growing up gay.
I'm often asked if I'm proud of being gay, and I'm really not. I'm not proud of being gay any more than I'm proud of being right-handed. And the reason for that is because I never struggled with it, and I was never told it was bad. I didn't go to school. You know, I wasn't bullied in high school about it, and when the adopted family, it was no issue. So I never overcame anything. I just have been like this since the dawn of time, and nothing changed.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lunn, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and John Frame contributed program material. Thanks also to Jonathan Gruber and Eric Beauchemin at Radio Netherlands. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, 5RRR Woomera, South Australia, KEOS College Station, Texas, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Started as a whisper that swelled into a chorus of a million crying for change. This time will be different, 'cause we can't make it different, and there's no way I'm gonna sit around and wait. No, not any longer.
Not any longer.
Not any longer. Can we just stand together?
Together.
The lonely make us stronger. Yeah.
We are the ones we've been waiting for. You say you won't change. I say yes, we can. Let there be healing from shore to shore. Hear them crying.
Chorus of millions crying for change. And this time will be different, 'cause we can make it different.
Kreiss and Debbie Holloway, and that was called Yes We Can. And our thanks to J.D. Doyle for providing this extra music that we use as well.
KPFT is soliciting nominations for listener members to our program council. The KPFT Program Council is an advisory body founded to give broader community input on programming. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit kpft.org to apply now and make plans to attend the Wednesday, March 18th local station board meeting, location to be posted, where your nomination will be discussed and voted on. At kpft.org, you can find full information about the program council. You can also submit your own nomination. Don't forget to attend the March 18th local station board meeting, location to be posted at kpft.org, to speak to the board which votes on your nomination. KPFT encourages members of our diverse listening audience to get involved. Women, people of color, youth, you're invited and encouraged to apply. Visit kpft.org for information about the program council. KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Sitting in the foxhole, dodging all the shrapnel, waiting for my time to come. When along came a general with word from the capital, told me that I'd have to run. I asked, what's the problem? General said, son, I've heard you're a queer, so you better run along now. Didn't like you anyhow, get your butt out of here. Well, I've been doing a good job, my record compares to none. And it's okay if I kill a man, but I better not get caught loving one. And the moral of the story is to fight for love and glory, never mind it if you're straight or gay. I'm proud to be queer, that's the reason why I'm here, fighting for freedom in the USA. Give us our own army, we could use a few good men and women to defend the lesbian gay. We'll fight for our freedom and demand a few amends to the laws that take our rights away. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay. Give us our own lawyers, our own courts and our own land, our own schools and our own families. Give us our own cities and our own United States. We declare our sexual liberty. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay. Give us our own communion, matrimony's holy state, with benefits and health insurance plan. We'll take each other hand in hand, woman to woman and man to man. We are proud and gay Americans. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and this is Queer Voices on KPFT. And this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. Those two songs were called Military Ditty and Give Us Our Own, and were by a favorite artist of mine, Martin Swinger. The only way you could hear those songs is if you have the cassette tape he released in 1994 called Singin' Out. And the words cassette tape are the key words for the show this month. Last November on QMH, I did a show called Lesbians on Cassette, and had a lot of fun doing it, as it gave me a chance to showcase music you seldom get a chance to hear. So I'm calling this month's show Gay Guys on Cassette, and it'll be part one, with the second part continued on my March show. I'm using the same criteria. An artist's recording could only have been released on cassette tape, not on vinyl or CD or reissued on CD. So this puts us mostly in the 1980s or 90s, with releases exclusively by independent artists. These are the ones who generally sold their tapes at live performances, in coffee houses, or at the few gay and lesbian bookstores, because that was really the only means they had of getting their music out there. They had no label backing, and tapes were also cheaper to produce, and some were even homemade or made as demos. Remember, this was way before the internet became the main means to distribute music, and unlike old vinyl or CDs, there does not seem to be any market for old tapes. Dealers just do not want to fool with them. You rarely see them on eBay, for example, so this is a disappearing part of our culture. I've culled through the approximately 250 music tapes by gay men in my collection and did lots of research, trying to determine if the recording also came out in another format. Like, for example, if a tape was later reissued on CD, well, it's not eligible. And this is not a perfect science. My research materials and the internet only go so far, but I think I was fairly accurate in keeping what you'll hear to my guidelines. Also, like on most of my shows, you'll notice that I'm attracted to songs where the lyrics are blatantly gay or lesbian. One way I explain this is I think I was about 30 before I ever heard a song that really spoke to me as a gay person. A song where the pronouns were correct for me and the subject matter actually addressed my gay life. So, in my own way, I'm getting this music out there, music that back then never had a chance of being played on the radio. By the way, the music you've been hearing under this introduction, of course, comes from a cassette, from 1992 by Ted Fox, from his tape One of Us. And the song, the only instrumental on the album, is called Songs for the Quilt. But I quite like many other songs on his tape, so here's one called Tell Me Why.
There's so many dying, and they seem unconcerned somehow. But that does not have to be. No, the change comes from you and me.
Fox from 1992 and Tell Me Why from his very political album One of Us. And always political were the duo Romanowski and Phillips. I can't say enough to get across my respect for the musical contributions they gave us, especially at a time when almost no one else was doing so to the same extent. When they were recording together from 1983 and for the next 10 years, they released 6 full-length albums of materials that gave us and others a look at our culture, questioning homophobia, and sharing the humor and trial of our lives. In a way, they recorded the soundtrack of our lives. I did a very in-depth feature on them on my May of 2003 show, and one of the songs I played then is one they would probably I rather not play. It was from a live show recorded at the Valencia Rose, a wonderful San Francisco venue, and the recording quality is admittedly not studio quality. But hey, it's history and a good song. They called their 1983 cassette tape In the Outfield because, gee, isn't that where most gay men, when they played baseball, ended up? That was certainly my situation when I was forced to play. The song, one of three from that tape that did not show up on later releases, is called Tell the Children.
Just to understand why two men he saw today were walking close together hand in hand.
You can change the subject, tell them that it's very bad, but why not tell them that's a man?
Love each other just like mom and dad. Just tell the children. Inside says I am different somehow.
bed, never sees the light of day, feeling like the only one, all alone.
Romanowski and Phillips almost exclusively recorded their own material, but on their second album, Trouble in Paradise, they did a cover version of a wonderful song called Must Have Been Drunk by Minneapolis folk singer Larry Havelock. I've got the tape the original song came from, Larry's 1985 release called Bye Now, Gay Later, and Bye was spelled B-I. In fact, I can't resist sharing two songs from that tape, so here are Must Have Been Drunk and one talking about being arrested while cruising in a park, with the interesting title of Pork Lips Now.
Well, I woke up in the morning with you wrapped inside my arms. As night the tent got cold, so we just snuggled to keep warm. Now I must admit, you had started feeling pretty good, and I was feeling you a little better than I should. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. You don't talk like Mr. Rogers, I don't look like Doris Day. Now maybe it's the wine and weed that made us act so queer, or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Well, my girlfriend, she's suspicious, she must know there's something wrong. Ever since that night, my need for her is twice as strong. And we've avoided sleeping out our wrestling since then, but deep inside I feel this need to hold you once again. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. We don't have the right equipment for the games we seem to play. Now maybe it's the wine and weed made us act so queer, or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Now you have long been married, and you've got a couple kids, and you swear your wife feels better than your buddies ever did. But me, I found the flaw in our old denial game. I've slept with men cold sober, and it feels good just the same. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. I swear God wouldn't let a former altar boy behave. No way. Now maybe it's the wine and weed that made us act so queer, or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Of a man in uniform, especially blue and black. But that was all too obvious, so they tried another tack. Before you go to Loring Park, you'd best save up some bail, 'cause the only thing that gets them off is tossing you in jail. I'm kissing police in Loring Park. It's
hard to spot plain clothes men when you see them in the dark. If they throw up, they'll quick reveal their true identity. But I'll taste a lot of forklifts before they slap those cuffs on me. 1 minute into Loring Park, my roommate found a friend. They were getting intimate in only 5 or 10. This man showed him the biggest bluff my roommate ever saw. Too late before he learned, he held the long limb of the law. That's why I'm kissing police in Loring Park. It's hard to spot plainclothes men when you see them in the dark. If they throw up, they'll quick reveal their true identity. But I'll taste a lot of pork clips before they slap those cuffs on me. Seems I can never get police the nights I want to find one. My sense of duty urges me to really get behind one. I can see them bending forward just to satisfy my need. And every handsome cop, just another mouth to feed. I'm kissing police in Loring Park. It's hard to spot plain clothes men when you see them in the dark. If they throw up, they'll quick reveal their true identity. But I'll taste a lot of pork bits before they slap those cuffs on me. Now for all the trouble that they cause, so hard to be trusting. Heard the horror stories of the men that they keep busting. But I know it's all some dirty scheme to stop my ears rusting. All it does is force me to something more disgusting. Kissing police in Loring Park. Hard to spot plain clothes men when you see them in the dark. If they throw up, they'll quick reveal their true identity. But I'll taste a lot of forklifts before they slap those cuffs on me.
Must Have Been Drunk in Pork Lips Now by Larry Havlock. Up next is another double play by an artist I consider one of our very best. Since 1990, Mark Weigel has released an incredible catalog of excellent work, songs that cut to the heart of our lives, well-crafted and well-sung. He's an artist not afraid of braving new subject matter, of touching on parts of our culture no one else approaches, and he does it all so well. I highly recommend you pick up all 6 of the CDs he's released since 1998. But you won't find his very first release, a tape called One Good Reason, issued in 1990. One of the songs from it is called Other Houses, which showed up on his second CD as a duet with Sonia of Disappear Fear. But here is the original solo version, followed by the song Leave the Light Alone.
Unwed daughter is a mother, whore. So glad it's she. Not yours. Who is there with me? Grandchild's a bastard. Daughter-in-law, they don't even like.
you said,
Good Reason, the 1990 album by Mark Weigel. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And this is another one of my shows where I had much too much great material for just 1 hour. So you can find a much longer version of this show on my site. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. This next song is very sweet. It was written by Rob Costin and recorded by Grant King. In the early 90s, they were both very active in the organization Out Music in New York City. And Rob released a 6-song cassette of he and 4 other artists. Grant did his song called James and Me.
James is so big, like a big tall tree. I climb his knees and his elbows. Now I'm riding up high on his shoulders. He says to quit pulling his ears and tickles me, so I'm holding on for real now. James has fuzzy hair. He runs with me and laughs like a bear. Now he spins, we are flying around and around. Everything blurs in a bright green circle. Sun, sky, tree, in a circle around James and me. James has a trunk. There is some wood in the back. I ride with James in the front part. We are going to drive to Eureka. We have to buy soil and seeds, and then we'll go to the dinosaurs for French fries. When we're on the way, I will lean my head in the breeze. Watch the clouds, we are flying around and around.
every four words in a bright green circle. Sun, sky, trees, in a circle around James and me.
You
want to check out Grant King's other releases, CDs called Let Love Out and Bodies of Water. And following Grant King was Patrick Arena, who was also featured on the Rob Costin tape. That was the 1993 version of his song Plastic Man. He's re-recorded it, and now it can be found on the Whoopi Bear music compilation GCD Global Volume 1 from 2007. I mentioned that Grant King's recording of James and Me came from a tape release by Rob Costin, but it also shows up, not on CD, but on two other sources. A rare 1993 tape by Grant himself called Entitled to Bloom, and also on a live concert tape from 1996 called Chosen Family. That's a wonderful tape with Grant performing with Dan Martin and Robin Bardoulis. Dan, with his partner Michael Biello, were the original founders of OutMusic. That Chosen Family tape is the only place you'll find Dan Martin's very amusing version of One Boy. And I'll let you hear his introduction of it.
The first time I heard this next song was also the first time that I saw Anne Margaret. And it was an important experience in my life. Little did I know how important it would be. She sang this in the film version of Bye Bye Birdie. And Michael and I have played around with this tune a little bit, but I'd like to do our version of it for you now. Special boy, one boy to go with, to talk with and walk with, one boy, that's the way it should be. Joke with, have coke with, one boy, not two or three. We didn't write that line, it's real. One day you'll find out this is what life is all about. Someone who is living just for you. One boy, one steady boy, one boy to live for, to care for, be there for, one boy. That's the way it should be. I've been searching for a long time for my one boy, but you see it, well, actually it hasn't been working out, and just when I decided to be alone, along comes John, and I feel it in my bones, and I feel it in my heart, and I know this time it's right, then bang, smack. Something always screws up, like some stupid argument about some stupid affair he had before I even knew him. I mean, he's always talking about his lover from 5 years ago. Donnie did it this way. Donnie did it that way. It made me furious. It made me jealous. It made John and I history. But before John, there was Terrence. He was perfect. He had exactly the kind of body I like. Exactly the body. But he had this disgusting habit that turned my stomach. He would bite his nails down to the bone and then spit them out onto the rug. Like no one else lived in the house, only him, his gorgeous body, his super ego, and his gross nail-biting habit. Before Terrence, there was Robbie. absolutely my type in every way. We fit together perfectly. I'm talking Spoon City. But now Robbie was into this one night out a week with the friends type stuff. I wouldn't have minded, but some of his friends were former lovers. That's weird. Sometimes he would even want to go away on trips with them. He actually went skiing without me the first year we met. It was his annual Colorado 5-day long ski weekend. Hot chocolate, fireplace, tight ski pants, rosy cheeks. No. Now, I've never been skiing. In fact, I hate the thought of it. But I've read about the scene, and I've watched enough porno to know better. Ski my ass. Oh, Chris, doll face of life, but he talked too much about nothing, and he didn't like the East Village or Derek Jarman films. Patrick hated Mexican food and wore polyester boxers. Now, I love boxers and jockeys and straps, but polyester, please. I try, I really do. I do. It's a tough market, but I'm still looking. Sometimes I see that one boy walking down the street, and I stop and I ask myself, when will he find out? This is what life is all about. Will he ever see? I need him and he needs me. One boy, one steady boy, one boy to be with forever and ever. One boy, that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be.
Dan Martin from the 1996 tape, Chosen Family. Another act I've been very pleased to see several times in person is the duo called Y'all. James Dean Jayberg and Stephen Cheslig DeMeyer were for about 12 years a very entertaining country folk comedy act. They released 7 full-length CDs, but I have a couple of their tape-only releases, and one of them gives you not only a taste of their music, but also their trademark comedy style, with a long, rambling monologue by Jaybird. Their first tape from 1993 was called An Evening of Stories and Songs, and they subtitled their name with the description, White Trash Country Gospel. The first song from that tape is called Country Family, and from there I'll go to their tape from 2000 called Live and Liver. Or, knowing them, it could have been called Live and Liver. You never could tell with them. You'll hear Jaybird talk about earthworms before they finish up with the song Nana's Famous Chicken and Dumplings. Here's Y'all.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Daddy wants to make it, wants to make it with me. Gonna start our own blooded country family. Times are ripe for changing, changing history. But no matter how hard we try, always lose the baby, always lose the baby. Hey, y'all, and welcome to our very first recording session. Right here, strumming his heart out on the guitar from Cornflake, Indiana, it's my man, Stephen Cheslig DeMeyer. And I'm James Dean Jaybird from Okie Dokie, Texas. Hey, y'all, just sit back and relax, because the white trash country gospel train just pulled into the station.
One, two, one, two, three, four,
come back to the general store. Come stock up on groceries. Gonna hide away so we can make our country family over easy breakfast. Same day thing for lunch. But no matter how much we cry, always lose the baby, always lose the baby, yow! Daddy wants to make it with me.
gonna start our own blue-blooded country family.
Hey! Time to ride for changes, changing history. But no matter how hard we try, always lose the baby. Always lose the baby, always lose the.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Baby.
Stephen and I have just finished writing our autobiography, and we're calling it The Good Book. It's subtitled The True Story of Y'all. It is, my daddy's a tent revivalist, so I felt like I had a little bit of a license there to, you know, use that term, because my daddy, I grew up with The Good Book, and this is just like, you know, it's our own. It's the y'all, I wouldn't go so far as to call it the y'all Bible, because I think that would be kind of pushing it, but it is kind of our whole story, so
from the beginning.
From the beginning, that's right. In fact, the whole thing starts with "in the beginning." Just, you know, just as a little thing there. I'm not really sure what I was going to say there, but it came out like that. I did want to tell you there. I'm actually going to read a little bit from the Good Book and later on in the evening, just, you know, short little bits, just to give you all a taste of it. But there's also stories that I don't really need to read because they're so clear in my mind. One of the stories is about my grandparents, my mamaw and papaw, which is my daddy's mother and father. And my mamaw gave birth to my daddy, a tent revivalist, and my Uncle Joe, a man who wears dresses and sells trailer homes down in Okie-Dokie, Texas. So that's quite a mix they got there. And they're the only two boys. So I guess, you know, that says something about the... I don't know what it says something about polarity or something. About genes. What does it say about genes, though? I don't really know. Well, I got to spend a couple of weeks for 3 years in a row with Mamaw and Papaw on their farm in Big Squaw, Texas. You know, they were like, for the most part, regular farmers. Papaw had his cows and his hay and, you know, all that farmer stuff. And Mamaw had her pigs and her garden vegetables and her earthworms. Now, this was back in the 70s, and Mamaw was just really sure that earthworms were going to be the future of cooking. But soybeans won out, as we all know. There is no earthworm milk in the stores. But Mamaw was sure of it, and unfortunately, her dreams were never found. She had recipes for earthworm type foods, and in fact, you could probably, you know, find a lot of those things in maybe the Moosewood restaurant. It would be a good place, since we are in Ithaca. Yeah, I think if they would have just like taken up on, I think that's where you would find kind of things like earth burgers and no oatmeal cookies and peanut butter squares, things that Mamaw was just the second nature to her. And of course, I was there for 3 years in a row, and I had no idea that Mamaw was doing this till the third year. The first year I was there, Mamaw put me in charge of her earthworms. I had no idea what they were about, what they were for. I had no idea what the cows were for. I just loved the cows. I thought they were really good. I had no idea about this whole, you know, ends up on the kitchen table kind of thing, or I might have had a much more tragic childhood. Because the things my mama threw in that griddle, I don't know, it just, you know, it was whatever it was. But and then they had all fancy names for it, like chicken divine, and actually my daddy called it chicken dive in, because he liked it so much. They had lots of broccoli and, you know, creamy stuff in it, and like cans of soup and stuff like that. But I'm going way off here. I did want to tell y'all a little bit about the earthworms, because it's a very special part of my life. Mamaw put me in charge of the earthworms, and I would go out there. I would go at dusk after all the chores were done, and I would take a little flashlight and a little jar, a mason jar, much like this one that I'm holding right now, and it was full of magic liquid, my mamaw told me. But actually, I found out later it was just water, but it was magic to me, because I'd sprinkle that little magic liquid over the dirt, and they were in these trays of dirt in the back of the barn where it was cool and moist and dark, and then suddenly after a couple of seconds, the worms would start coming to the top, because they liked that little splash of magic liquid. They would come up to, you know, say, hey, Jay Bird, thank you for the magic liquid. But that's what I thought they were saying. I'd say, howdy, little worms, you know. And it got kind of, I got really familiar with. They were my friends. I decided these little fellas were my friends. And I decided my third year there that I would name all the earthworms. I was going to name every one of them. I think there were about 600 of them at that time. And Papaw thought this was a real good idea. I think I was getting in Papaw's hair a little bit at that point. And so Papaw gave me some little pieces of paper and some little twine and a little pencil. And I went out there with my, you know, with my flashlight, my magic liquid, and all my little supplies. And went out there and I laid it all out and I sprinkled the magic liquid on. And the first worm that I saw, I pulled him up and I decided his name would be Warren. And I wrote Warren on the little name tag, and I put the string through it, and I tied it around Warren. And so I was raised traveling with the tent revival, my daddy's tent revival, so I didn't get to join the Boy Scouts or nothing like that. So I wasn't familiar with all these knot things and stuff. And I decided just in retrospect that I must have learned how to do a slip knot right there in Mamaw's barn, because I slipped and that knot just cut right through old Warren. Suddenly I had two worms there. I was terrified, but Mamaw told me not to worry, that that, you know, worms can, you know, be chopped up many times, as she very well knew. But anyway, this is a song. Yeah, sometimes she had to take them back out of the oven before they were, you know, to chop them up a little bit more because they were still moving. But anyway, this is a song about my grandmother.
One, two, three, four.
Nana, oh, Nana,
how many chickens can you fit into that pot? But Nana, oh, Nana, I'm coming home for supper and I hope that it's a lot.
We're going to take a little break now and we'll be back in half an hour. You're also free to come over to the Y'all Country Store and purchase one of our records, and actually Steve's helping out there. And also, if you're at home on your radio, you can look us up at http://songs.com/moo.
Nana, oh Nana, how many chickens can you fit into that pot? I said, Nana,
two more sets here at the cafe at Annabelle Taylor Hall. I'm the Cornell University.
This next artist is not really known as a singer, but he's very well known as a writer, having his songs covered by folks like Art Garfunkel, Liza Minnelli, Patti LuPone, Nancy Lamont, Michael Feinstein, Michael Callan, Judy Collins, and on and on. And he's recently been writing for Broadway with the musicals A Catered Affair and It's Only Life. And he's also served as musical director for Holly Near. He's John Bacchino, and from his 1985 tape, On the Arrow, is my favorite song by him, It Feels Like Home.
I hear your key in the door, unlocking more than wood. Ceiling may not be dry yet, but it feels like home. Yes, we have come from a long way. Friends say a long way still. I only know when you hold me, it feels like home. If you never rest, you'll never win. Since we're in this together, it feels like home. It feels like home.
I'm down to the last song. This went way too fast, and I want to thank you all for listening and taking this journey into the world of gay guys on cassette. Longtime listeners know that when I'm compiling these shows, I have no willpower, and just can't resist really trying to do the subject justice. So, part two of Gay Guys on cassette be continued on my March show. And by the time I get finished with both shows, there will be an additional 3 hours only available on play the songs that have language.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT is soliciting nominations for listener members to our program council. The KPFT program council is an advisory body founded to give broader community input on programming. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit kpft.org to apply now and make plans to attend the Wednesday, March 18th local station board meeting, location to be posted, where your nomination will be discussed and voted on. At kpft.org, you can find full information about the program council. You can also submit your own nomination. Don't forget to attend the March 18th local station board meeting, location to be posted at kpft.org, to speak to the board, which votes on your nomination. KPFT encourages members of our diverse listening audience to get involved. Women, people of color, youth, you're invited and encouraged to apply. Visit kpft.org for information about the program council. KPFT, Houston.
Do you enjoy listening to KPFT and wish that you could be a part of the team that puts our programming on the airwaves? Then come to one of our volunteer info sessions Monday, February 23rd at 6:30 p.m. or Thursday, February 26th at 12 noon. We currently have volunteer openings in special events, board committees, the music library, or the news department. Computer graphic designers are also wanted. Don't miss your chance to join the KPFT crew this Monday, February 23rd at 6:30 p.m. or Thursday, February 26th at 12 noon. Come on down to 419 Lovett Boulevard. Space is limited, so sign up now. Just email volunteer@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 316. KPFT Houston.
KPFT is soliciting nominations for listener members to our program council. The KPFT program council is an advisory body founded to give broader community input on programming. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit kpft.org to apply now and make plans to attend the Wednesday, March 18th local station board meeting, location to be posted, where your nomination will be discussed and voted on. At kpft.org, you can find full information about the program council. You can also submit your own nomination. Don't forget to attend the March 18th local station board meeting, location to be posted at kpft.org, to speak to the board which votes on your nomination. KPFT encourages members of our diverse listening audience to get involved. Women, people of color, youth, you're invited and encouraged to apply. Visit kpft.org for information about the program council. KPFT, Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.